Carl, you're doing some research that's looking at tumor-suppressing genes delivered by viruses. Perhaps I'll get you to describe for me how you would describe your research project.
Certainly. So a long, long time ago, back in 1996, our lab discovered a whole new family of so-called tumor-suppressing genes. These are genes that are expressed in cells normally, and cancer cells tend to try and turn them off because they suppress their growth. And so they're intrinsically growth-inhibitory genes. And so a long time ago, myself and one of the oral surgeons here at the University of Calgary were sitting around trying to, figure out how it might be possible to develop a better method for treating these oral cancers. Currently, surgery is a very big component of treating them, and my collaborator, Joe Dort, is really quite an excellent oral cancer surgeon, but he realized that there must be a better way, or he needs more tools in order to fight these cancers. And so we thought that it might be a good idea to combine these tumor suppressors that we discovered with a viral delivery mechanism. So we had a fellow here at the Southern Alberta Cancer Research Institute several years ago, a fellow named Patrick Lee, who discovered that if you put viruses, particular kinds of viruses, on cancer cells, the cancer cells were much more susceptible to being killed by them than normal cells. And so we decided that, well, if viruses by themselves can kill cancer cells, if they had in their own genome a tumor suppressor as well, they might be able to kill cancer cells twice as well. So we started working on this project together to see if we can generate a new agent that can really kill oral cancer cells very effectively. And so far, so good. Our initial experiments have been pretty promising.
Well, how do you combine the two? How do you get the genes to attach to the viruses?
That's a good question. And different viruses are differentially capable of doing that. So viruses come in almost all shapes and sizes, and some of them have very simple genomes, the number of genes they have that code their little coat proteins and the molecules that replicate their DNA and stuff like that. And other ones are very, very large and complex. We tend to try and use viruses that aren't terribly complex, so as simple as possible, but that you can also manage to put in extra genetic material into them. So they have their usual genes that allow them to replicate. We fiddle with them so they don't replicate too much, so they're not too dangerous. But we also put in some of these tumor-suppressive genes, these genes that will either stop cells from growing or ask them to commit suicide. So if the cancer cell decides to kill itself, that's good, and overexpressing some of these tumor-suppressing genes can do that.
So how do you actually get it into the body or into the tumor?
Well, viruses are good at infecting things, and that's one of the strengths of using this particular approach. So most of the cells in our body have various proteins expressed on the outside of the cells, and viruses over thousands or more years of evolution have developed the ability to recognize particular so-called receptors on the outside of the cells and use these to sneak into the cell. Once they're into the cell, they start expressing their genes, and that's where our tumor suppressor comes in. So it starts being made inside the cancer cells as well.
How would you see this being administered to the body? Is it something you'd take in pill form or a mouthwash or by needle?
That's a very good question, too. We have considered a lot of different ways of doing it, and one of the ones that we think might have the best effect overall would be having some form of a paste or an ointment that is a little bit water insoluble on the outside to localize the virus to the area of the tumor to allow it to maximum probability of infecting the cells in that area and therefore killing the cancer cells. So we have working with us on this project a biophysical fellow who's working on producing different sorts of emulsions that can serve as an agent to localize the virus right next to the cancer. So we've got a lot of different people on board on this project.
How many treatments might you have to do in order to make it work? Do you just do it once, or is it something that you have to do over several occasions?
I guess it would depend on the stage of the particular tumor. So, I mean, if it's a very, very early stage, it might not require too many treatments. We don't know yet. So there are a number of different viruses in different phases of clinical trials in different cancer types, and many of them are producing some pretty promising results. And one of the things that is very attractive about this new mode of attacking cancer is that it's not nearly as toxic as a lot of the other traditional methods of therapy. So, for example, radiation treatments tend to make patients pretty sick, and a lot of chemotherapeutics do as well. I've known a number of people that have gone through cancer treatment with different forms of chemo, and it's a trial due to the number of fairly intense side effects. And so the viruses tend to have much more benign side effects than classic methods. So the number of treatments, we don't know exactly. It'll probably turn out to be similar to the traditional methods of treatment, but these clinical trials are underway to figure just those things out. We don't expect this one method to be fully effective, very much similar to the fact that very few methods, except possibly surgery, are fully effective by themselves.
How prevalent is the oral cancer?
Ooh, gee, it's not one of the most prevalent cancers, but it's one that has a very poor prognosis, and it also has major sort of patient effects, because often it results in major surgery in the oral cavity area, and that has long-lasting effects. So, it's probably in one of the top 10 most common cancers, but I honestly don't know the exact numbers.
So right now with your testing, are you testing it on humans yet, or are you just doing this with mice or that sort of thing?
Right. Nope, we're not doing it on humans yet because we've just started the project, and if one were to jump right into humans, there'd be a lot of serious ethical considerations. So the usual way that you start something like this is you first do it in a cell system. So we've got a number of human oral cancer cell types and cell lines. So these are established cell lines that are pretty genomically unstable, fast-growing, nasty little devils. And so we're testing the efficiency of killing them with our different combinations of the tumor suppressives that we have and viruses. So far, so good in that department. We can kill cells fairly well. The next phase will be taking those cells and putting them into mice in a system that as closely as possible resembles the human oral cancer system. So what we'll do is we'll induce oral cancers in the mice and see if we can eradicate them with this protocol. Following that, if everything works according to plan, and so far so good, but it's still quite a long way to go, then if it shows promise, then we would begin the whole process of human clinical trials, and that takes a while.
You're working with a focus on oral cancers, but do you see this method, if it's successful, being applied to other types of cancer?
Totally, yeah. That's a good question. There are probably very few cancer types that it couldn't be used for. In cancer treatments, a big part of it is accessibility, and oral cancers, being in the oral cavity, are generally fairly accessible, and so we thought that it might be smart to start with those forms of cancers since we can track them fairly easily and see how the animal models work fairly rapidly.
How much longer do you think it'll take before you get to the point where you could say, hey, we can put this on the market?
Ooh. Putting it on the market or getting it into clinical trials? Well, clinical trials usually take a few years. So if our experiments go well, we could, I'm pretty certain, in a couple of years from now, have a very good idea of whether it's worth pursuing it into human clinical trials. So that would be finishing all the cell experiments, finishing the preclinical animal models, and then after that, think about doing a clinical trial. Now, clinical trials, they take a while, and rightfully so, because you have to be very careful about introducing new treatments into the human population, simply because if you just think something ought to work, doesn't mean it's going to work. And it's not uncommon that certain treatments can cause more trouble than they're worth. So the regulatory bodies make sure that's not the case. And so we go through phase one, phase two, and then finally phase three clinical trials. And that does take time.
Well, it sounds incredibly interesting, and I sure hope that you get good results from this. Thank you very much, Carl.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.